What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started.
Hey, everybody. So this is Magnesium Part 2. In this part of the podcast, we talk about magnesium's role in helping with inflammation, as well as conditions that cause our kidneys to become magnesium wasting, and how important that is to avoid those conditions. We also finish on the RDA of magnesium, so the recommended daily allowance, and how to get it, what foods to take, what supplements to take, things of that nature. So listen and hope you guys like it.
And again, I think we talked about just calcium being pro-inflammatory, and so many of these diseases, especially of Western civilization, revolve around inflammation. Like, just we're swimming in inflammation every day.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every disease is some sort of chronic inflammation. Mm-hmm. I mean, arthritis, chronic, everything.
Yeah, IBD, whatever. Yeah, something's inflamed. So calcium overload is one of the main reasons of body-wide inflammation. And a good way, or at least one of the primary ways people measure inflammation in the body, like a blood test, is a protein called C-reactive protein. I'm sure if you had blood tests, then you've had this measured before. And it's a pretty good way to measure body inflammation. And studies have shown that supplementing with magnesium can actually lower C-reactive protein. So magnesium kind of acts as like an antioxidant. It reduces oxidative damage, and it reduces inflammation that way. And that's just one of the ways it does it.
Yeah, that C-reactive protein, that's a test that's involved with diabetes, heart disease. There's a lot of diseases that you're going to be searching for.
It's a predictor of a lot of diseases. Yeah. If that's high, something's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, your body is not... You do want inflammation to occur, but you want inflammation to occur when you step on a nail or...
Post-workout.
Yeah, you maybe... Oh, you know, you got the flu. Your body's fighting the flu virus.
Yes, inflammation.
Yeah, that's when you want it. You don't want it because it's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday and you just ate...
And you're pissed.
Yeah, like, you know, that's when you don't need inflammation. Like, you don't... Yeah. If you're just sitting around doing nothing and you've been pretty inactive, like, you shouldn't just have some sort of shoulder pain, some sort of inflammation going on in your body. You don't want chronic inflammation.
No, you don't. And actually, this is a good, not to dime out my wife a little bit, but she was kind of sick last week, and I understand when you're sick. Actually, I don't understand because I haven't been sick in forever. I don't get sick straight up. I'm not knocking on wood. Bring it on, viruses. I wish a virus would. I'm bulletproof. Go ahead. But so she was dieting, she was sick, and so her diet kind of went to shit, right? She was kind of eating out. She was kind of eating whatever she wanted, and I totally understand that. Yeah. When you're sick, your willpower just is non-existent, right? So now she's feeling a little better. But you know what kind of hurts nowadays? Her knee kind of hurts. Her neck kind of hurts. She's had a little bit of joint issues. And I was like, oh, you're paying a price for all these pro-inflammatory foods we had the past few days. And she's like, oh.
Sugar.
Yeah, it was sugar. Exactly. She had, like, pancakes one morning and, like, Starbucks drinks. Stuff like that. Yeah. All sugar stuff. And I was like, yeah, she's finally being really in tune with her body. She can kind of tell. And I'm telling her, like, this is what's going on. She's like, yeah, I'm kind of sore. But she's not working out. I'm like, yeah, this is what your body is doing. It's processing this stuff.
The first, like, clear example I've had of that is I was at one of my friends' his kid's birthday party, had a slice of their birthday cake. I mean, I was keto for probably about a year at this point. And all of a sudden, like, on the drive home, my left shoulder started hurting. Like, I've had shoulder pain for a lot of my just, like, adult life. But, like, it's been a long time since my left shoulder started hurting. And I was really active at the time. I was coaching wrestling, you know, wrestling a couple hours a day on top of lifting weights. So me having shoulder problems wasn't really unexpected. I just haven't felt it. And then as soon as I got that little bit of sugar in me, my left shoulder was killing me on the drive home. I had to drive home with just using my right arm, which is not my good arm, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, like, sugar really is that inflammatory. Like, I never really thought that. That was, like, my first clear sign, like, hey, what I'm doing is right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Yeah, once you get in tune with your body, it does tell you what's working and what's not working. And I guess that we can lead into magnesium and the kidneys now. So
Another seamless transition.
Yeah, I wrote all these notes out, and I really had a hard time. Actually, getting the notes together wasn't that hard, but getting a flow together was hard because there's just so many things magnesium's involved in. Like, I could honestly talk about this for weeks, and I feel like I wouldn't really do it justice. But
yeah, and I feel like we've had, since it is so, it's involved with everything, like, it's so easy to get sidetracked.
Yeah, like, what do you talk about? Everything? Like, we'll just be talking for months. So
just go over all 650 plus
chemical reactions. Yeah. I know. So really, our kidneys are so important with everything, but specifically with magnesium, because our kidneys filter about 2,400 milligrams of magnesium a day. Again, this is an average meal. And it will reabsorb about 2,300 milligrams. So the bulk of magnesium in our body gets reabsorbed. That's why you can have a real shit diet for a big chunk of your life and not really have magnesium deficient symptoms. You know, you can go 20, 30 years of your life and not really notice it because our kidneys are so good at reabsorbing it. But the problem is that condition, that situation changes with certain situations, with medication, with diseases, and different stimulus with the kidneys. So that had me kind of go down this road with insulin, because I know we put a lot of people on keto diets, and there's something called the keto flu, and that really involves a lower insulin in your blood, and the lower the insulin, it tells your kidneys to become sodium wasting, so your kidneys will reabsorb less sodium. So I thought, if high insulin tells the kidneys to reabsorb more sodium, why doesn't high insulin tell the kidneys to reabsorb more magnesium, right? Because, I mean, you would think it'd be similar. It's the same organ. They're just minerals.
They're both positively charged. It would make sense.
It would make sense, right? So I went down the rabbit hole a little bit and took a deep dive into kidney, just anatomy and physiology and how it works. And I found out that magnesium is reabsorbed in the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle. And magnesium is the only ion reabsorbed in this location. Sodium and potassium reabsorption mainly occurs in the proximal tubule rather than the thick ascending tube. So they get reabsorbed in different locations. That's why they can be influenced differently from the same hormone. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So sodium and potassium are absorbed first, and then magnesium is later down the line. Magnesium would be reabsorbed if it is reabsorbed.
Yeah.
And is that, I'm just speculating here, it's because they have different charges. Sodium and potassium are just a plus one. Magnesium is a plus two. I'm guessing it's working off an electrical gradient.
Yeah, it is. So the driving force behind magnesium transport in the thick ascending limb is the transepithelial voltage gradient. So which means a voltage difference between the epithelial cell. So, positive and negative, things like that.
So did that just get shut off, or just isn't it negative enough to attract the magnesium out?
Oh, that's part of the area that we don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I've tried to, what is really going on there. If you keep digging down that rabbit hole, you run into a cement floor.
Okay.
There's just nothing else to do. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm honestly surprised that with all the talks of magnesium out there, because I, just trying to research it, I found so many podcasts on magnesium. A lot of people are talking about it, but there aren't as many, super deep dives as I was expecting to find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with CoQ10, there's a lot of,
pretty detailed stuff.
Yeah, that I didn't even really think of. I was like, it's good for this? Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. But with magnesium, I've been really disappointed with the research out there.
So disappointed. Yeah, you and me both. Yeah. So the problem really with magnesium and the kidneys is magnesium wasting. That's the problem. Because you can have a shit diet, but if your kidney keeps reabsorbing a good amount of magnesium, you're going to be okay. Our bones have a huge store of magnesium. We can just pull it from our bones. And you'll be deficient in your 50s and 60s, but guess what? You're old and fat anyways. Magnesium is the least of your worries, right? So things that affect your kidney's ability to reabsorb magnesium, those are the big players. That's what you need to worry about.
Yeah, and if you just think of it this way, you can store a bunch of magnesium, but if every single day you're at a negative balance, you're always losing more than you're putting in, eventually that's going to catch up.
It will, 100%.
You can't be a millionaire and just spend money, $100 a day, without putting money back into your account and just thinking it's going to last forever.
Yes, that's a great metaphor.
I mean, there's so many professional athletes that you've seen do that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, exactly. They stop playing and they keep that budget like they are playing, and now they're broke. Yeah. That made me want to go a little bit deeper into what situations can cause magnesium wasting, since that's really the cause of magnesium deficiency. So if you know anything about us, we're very pro-salt. And this is just something I thought of. So a low-salt diet can actually lead to magnesium wasting in the kidneys due to your body's response to low salt. So low salt raises a hormone called aldosterone, and aldosterone helps our body reabsorb more salt in low salt situations. So this hinders our body's ability to reabsorb magnesium, because aldosterone leads to volume expansion in the kidneys, and volume expansion in the proximal tubule inhibits reabsorption of magnesium. So there ain't no reason to go on a low salt diet. If you ever thought there was, there's not.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, you have a whole article on it. There's, what is it, the salt fix?
Yep, the salt fix.
I'm not going to try to pronounce that doctor's name. I always mess it up.
Oh, it's the worst, yeah.
It's like the combination of like four different last names.
It is.
Is it D. Nickel Antonio?
That's, oh yeah, you got it. That's good. Okay. Yeah. I can't stand that guy now, by the way. Did I ever told you that?
No.
Oh, God, man.
Is everything salt?
No, he's, I agree with the whole salt stuff. I really like it, but his new book is about like healthy fats. And it's all like olive oil, like peanuts, and like not really a lot of meat. So he's turned into the whole like heart healthy, kind of play both sides.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I just don't like it.
Well, I don't understand how olive oil can be the recommended. I mean, if you're looking at like the Mediterranean population, I can see that. But outside of like Greece, who's been eating olives for thousands of years?
Yeah, not even the Greek. Trust me, whole narrative isn't even true either.
I mean, wasn't it mostly just used as like as an oil, like to bathe with?
Yeah, for candles.
Yeah,
and lamps. Yeah,
most of the ancient use I've heard of olive oil wasn't food
for eating. No, yeah. It wasn't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it wasn't until fairly recently that the whole Mediterranean area started actually eating olive oil.
But and that's not even all of Europe. That's
the Mediterranean. No, very small. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like the Scandinavian countries.
That's like talking about California and the United States. Like it's just a section of it, but.
Another sidetrack.
Yeah, that's another sidetrack. I guess this is kind of your wheelhouse, talking about exercise with magnesium.
Yeah, I mean, that's just obviously when you sweat, you're going to lose some minerals. Luckily, when you do become more active, and basically like the more you sweat, the better your body does get at sweating. So you're going to lose more water and less minerals. But if you're out there, you know, playing basketball for 3 hours,
you're losing something.
You're losing a lot. Like, yeah, maybe that ratio is down, but yeah, you're still going to be losing more. And then also, we talked about how much it's used with creating ATP. I don't think of a more energy-demanding, ATP-more demanding thing than exercise. Like, obviously, like your brain's probably going to be using more. Your muscles are definitely using more ATP during that time. So yeah, that's a very easy way to deplete your magnesium. It's, again, we mentioned this earlier. That's why somebody will drop dead after running a marathon, but they won't drop dead, you know, 5 minutes into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And they, from the outside to glean in, they don't look out of shape.
Oh, yeah. It's somebody that's running all the time. They probably have a six-pack. I'm sure all their health markers are going to be fine. Pretty good. Yeah.
And I bet their magnesium serum levels came back normal as well.
Well, most typically, this person's probably going to be on a high-carb diet as well. Going through a lot more glycolysis, using up a lot more of that magnesium.
Yep, that's true. Actually, that's a good point to lead into. So the next situation that can cause magnesium wasting is something that affects a vast majority of people, especially in the United States here, is diabetes. So specifically, diabetes causes magnesium wasting through two methods. One is hyperglycemia, which is just increased blood sugar. It leads to osmotic dryasis. And osmotic dryasis is increased urination due to the presence of something in the fluid that is filtered by the kidneys. In this case, it's just excess glucose. So too much glucose increases urine production, which results in magnesium wasting. And also hyperinsulinemia, which is just a case of your insulin is constantly elevated, which happens in diabetics, causes our kidneys to reabsorb less magnesium as well. So diabetics are hit kind of twice with magnesium.
So that would impact both type 1 diabetics and type 2.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Type 1 and type 2 diabetics are affected with this.
Yeah, I was about to ask if it would matter, but yeah, the increased blood sugar is very typical with a type 1 diabetic, and then the hyperinsulinemia.
Type 2. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And actually, this had me think a little bit about there has to be a reason why while insulin causes our body to dump magnesium. And this kind of led me down. We haven't talked about this, so you can go down this rabbit hole with me. So what I was thinking is there has to be an evolutionary reason why insulin causes magnesium deficiency. So back in the day, say a million years ago, when summertime was around and there were fruits to eat, specifically berries, you'd want to get them to put on some weight to get fat to prepare for winter. So berries are high in fructose and glucose compared to meat, of course. So both glucose and fructose metabolism require a lot of magnesium. So for the liver to process glucose, it requires 28 atoms of magnesium. For fructose, it requires 56 atoms of magnesium. So deficient magnesium makes our cells insulin resistant, resulting in weight gain. Because insulin is required, or insulin to act on our cells requires magnesium. So I feel like it's a double whammy of how to get us fat quick. Like, it pretty much makes us diabetic for a month so we can get fat and prepare for winter.
Okay, I follow your logic. That does make sense.
Because there has to be a reason why.
Everything has to have a reason why. Because if it didn't make sense 100,000 years ago, those genes would
have made it.
Yeah, they would have died off, and they wouldn't have made it. Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, that situation of a high sugar diet, because if I walked into a field or a bush, whatever, a million years ago, and that bush was full of blueberries, guess what, everybody? We're eating blueberries. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what we're doing. We're eating all these blueberries. So you get situations of both hyperglycemia, high blood sugar, and hyperinsulinemia, high blood insulin. So in that instance, you're going to be dumping a lot of magnesium, and it's not going to be enough to make you magnesium deficient over the course of a lifetime. But for those few weeks, those 6 weeks or whatever, when you're eating more and more sugar, you're getting more and more magnesium depleted, causing you to get more and more insulin resistant, making you more susceptible to weight gain. That was just my thought. I didn't see that anywhere online. That's just me putting it together.
No, I'm following your logic there, and that does make a lot of sense.
Because magnesium is needed for glucose to enter the cell.
Yeah, I honestly believe that everything that happens to humans today has to have some sort of evolutionary benefit. Because if it didn't, why would it have been passed on?
Exactly, unless some weird random mutation, but we're not talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, even type 1 diabetes, like, yes, that is a disorder, it's genetic. But if these people couldn't survive, then how would it have been passed on? And it's just, you live a ketogenic diet, you eat that.
You wouldn't die.
Yeah, you're fine. You're running off of ketones. Mm-hmm. Your body can still produce enough glucose for you to survive. You're okay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So there's always a way around it. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense that you do want to be fatter, and that's definitely going to be a quick, easy way to make you fatter.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so,
If you're magnesium, so that's just basically not letting you tap into your fat stores if insulin's going to be more present, you're more resistant to insulin. Yeah. And if you're not using your fat stores, that means you're just accumulating fat.
You're just putting it there, exactly. And then these people would obviously go back to a more animal-based diet for the other 10 months out of the year, and they'd be perfectly healthy from a metabolic standpoint. And again, because it's not like sugar metabolism is going to kill you in 2 weeks or 6 weeks or 2 months. It's not. It's when you do it for 45 years that you're going to have issues, you know?
Oh, yeah, because today it's, I don't even want to call it summer to everybody. It's like hyper summer.
Every day.
Because even like a summer day 100,000 years ago was probably a very low carb diet compared to a typical day to us.
Yeah, how many berries were in that bush? Not that many, but we're eating all of them.
Probably less than your wife's drink at Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's sad. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. And I guess another situation that can cause your kidneys to become sodium wasting is stress. And that, I think, more people can relate to than even being diabetic.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same, same hormonal effect. You have a cortisol spike, increased blood sugar. With increased blood sugar goes increased insulin. All the same thing. All the same steps.
Exactly, yeah. That's why it's so important if you're out there and you're stressed and you're like, oh, I'm not losing weight, I'm dieting so much, and you're stressing over it. Stress can't stop weight loss in its tracks no matter how good you're eating.
Yeah, that's very important. And honestly, magnesium has no calories in it, so you don't need to increase more calories or anything like that. I mean, you could be eating more magnesium-rich foods, but a lot of this stuff is going to involve either gaining weight or losing weight, but it has absolutely nothing to do with calories in, calories out.
Yeah, exactly. And there is something that came up that it's upsetting, I know, especially to us, that every time you go to a doctor, they have a pill for you to fix your problem. And how that relates to magnesium is a lot of the current current pills out there, they contain fluoride. So fluoride binds to magnesium in our body and it makes it inaccessible. And if you go ahead, go look, next time you have a prescription, I guess it won't say on the label, it might, but you can Google like FDA reports on your medications and just look at the actual chemical name and you'll see fluoro in there, or specifically fluoride in there. And whenever time you take that, your body's metabolizing that, and the metabolism itself requires a lot of magnesium, but that fluoride will lock up magnesium and it's gone. It'll stash it in the bones as kind of a fluoride magnesium salt type thing, and you'll never see that magnesium again.
And fluoride,
that's a big deal.
Fluoride's everywhere. It's in our water. It's in toothpaste. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody that's listening drinks water on a daily basis and brushes their teeth on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Most likely with fluoride. Yeah. And if you talk to your dentist about fluoride, they're going to tell you it's good. They're, all those negative studies that show fluoride is bad are all fake news.
I know, it's crazy, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, hey, if you have money riding on invested something, in that. Yeah. If you need fluoride to be good and your career depends on it, fluoride's going to be good to you.
Fluoride's great.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So, and I guess...
do you... I mean, this is just a thought that popped in my head. Yeah. With fluoride being so, like, prominent in our dietary lives just now, do you think that's why so many people are magnesium deficient?
Oh, I think it's part of it. And I think it's mainly just from medications. Like, if you... I guess I can't remember the percentage now, but a vast majority of people out there, I think it's over 50%, are on at least two medications.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's something you take every day that's going to deplete you of magnesium. And how many people are actually supplementing with magnesium? Not that many.
Or eating magnesium-rich foods.
Yeah, especially that. Not too many.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to like the list of magnesium-rich foods, but when we start listing them, they're not going to be stuff like, oh, yeah, I love eating
that. Eat that every day. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So... yeah, I guess that's a good transition into just magnesium in food, and specifically magnesium in soil. So magnesium nowadays is lacking in soil. Specifically, magnesium content in grains has dropped 20% to pre-1968 values, and that's really due to the farming methods. So post-World War II, we kind of weaponized farming. Factories used to produce chemicals for bombs were now commissioned to produce chemicals for farming, specifically fertilizers. So we had leftover potassium that we used in bombs and like chemical warfare that now we just transition and use that in fertilizers. So fertilizers, the main three components are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, something called like NPK, they'll say. And those are the main constituents of fertilizer. And surprise, surprise, potassium is actually an antagonist for magnesium absorption. So we're just flooding the soil with potassium and not replacing the magnesium. So the plants are becoming magnesium deficient.
So just potassium is just getting used instead of magnesium?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they can get away with that because they can get away with not putting that much magnesium back into the soil. Because a plant will still grow, even if magnesium is very low. It seems like only a gross deficiency in magnesium will actually affect plant yield. And we all know now it comes down to money. So if a farmer or a corporation doesn't have to add something to the soil that's going to cut into their budget, but they'll still get the same yield, they're not going to add it, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure they haven't done all this research to realize how important it is.
How it's working, yeah, exactly. So... you want to talk about Roundup? I hate Roundup.
I mean, it's the worst thing out there.
God, I hate it, man.
But yeah, so it's sprayed on almost every single crop out there. We're even, most plants that are genetically modified so we can use more Roundup on the products. And why that's so bad in this particular case is it binds to magnesium and it makes it unavailable for the plants to absorb. So just another way that our vegetables are just not getting as much magnesium as they used to.
Exactly. And that also goes with pesticides. So pesticides we spray on the crops, they kill worms and bacteria. And we think that's a good thing. You know, the worms and bacteria eat those plants and they make them kind of, you know, bad for us. But the thing is, those worms and bacteria, they actually process the soil and break up these minerals, making them accessible for the plant. So without the worms, bacteria in the soil doing their job, the plants can't absorb that magnesium. It gets locked in the soil. It's just upsetting, man. Like, the soil is such a vital component. It's like it's a whole organism in itself. It works in harmony when you leave it alone. But humans had to find a way to try and mess it up, to try and improve it. And they just made the whole thing worse.
Yeah, we've changed up so many factors that go along there. So now there's a cornfield. Back in the day, cows would have came, ate all that stuff.
Manure.
Fertilized that entire area, left. They would have came back once that crop grew back up, or those plants grew back up. But now it's just plant, cut it. And if anything else tries to live around there, you kill it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So an entire ecosystem is just now for plants. No animals, no insects.
Nothing natural about that.
Yeah,
nothing natural about that. And back in the day, those cows, guess what? A few of those old cows, they would die right there in the fields. And you know what? All that calcium, all that magnesium, all that protein, all those nutrients would go back into the soil where it's supposed to be. It's all a cycle. And now none of that happens.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen, like, a dead cow just sitting in the middle of a cornfield or anything like that.
Man, can you imagine, like, there would be tweets about it and Facebook posts about animal cruelty and all this shit, when really it's just a cycle of life.
And just, like, how that entire field is now
contaminated.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got E. coli all everywhere. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, no, man, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad, like, how much our food growing processes have changed, and I don't really see a whole lot of hope making it seem like we're going to change back. There's a few people out there I hear talking about doing it the right way. Rob Wolf has a lot of great ideas when it comes to this, but there's only...
It's hard. It's a hard sell.
Yeah.
We're so far detached from our food production, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I know.
We just think chickens are born in, like, plastic bags. Like, oh yeah, they come in these little plastic containers, right? You know, we don't understand the process involved in getting the food to us. And I guess, yeah, talk about refining foods... So just refining food in general, so every time you go into the grocery store, those like 10 middle aisles where everything's in a box, all that stuff's refined, and refining food depletes magnesium as well. Now, if you're eating somewhat similar to us, like whole food-based diets, and you're just shopping around the outside aisles of the grocery store, you don't have to really worry about refined foods. But how many people eat refined foods in this country? Most?
I think that's the reason why, like, so the major difference that I've noticed when you go to, like, a Whole Foods versus... like a Safeway, just like, you know, a health food store versus like a normal standard grocery store, is if you go to a health food store, the outside is gigantic and the middle is just like they have the smallest aisles. If you go to a normal grocery store, it's
opposite.
All aisles and there's like a little bit on the outside. That's how you can really tell what's healthy and what's not.
That's a good point. Yeah, I never really noticed that. Yeah.
Like, yeah, go to a Whole Foods, there's one little tiny aisle for cereal. Like the biggest aisle there is either going to be like supplements or like coffee. Outside of that, there's a whole not a lot of other things. But you go to a normal grocery store.
There's 20 aisles.
There's how much cereal, how much soda.
Like yeah, they have chips, everything. Yeah.
So that's how you can really tell. And
yeah.
Is magnesium fortified? Do they add that back to wheat products?
They don't.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Yeah. They add, I'm pretty sure they add calcium though. I actually didn't look into fortification of wheat or grains, but yeah.
Because I know B vitamins are fortified in a lot of wheat products, but I wasn't sure if they did magnesium as well.
You want to Google that real quick?
Yeah, I can.
That might be a good idea, actually. I'm about 99% sure they don't have magnesium back into it. But another thing that causes magnesium being kind of lower or more deficient in our current food is boiling vegetables actually causes some of the magnesium to be wasted. It actually leaches out into the water, so... You cook the vegetables in the water. How many people actually reuse that boiled water? Not too many. You just pour it down the sink. So I read a few papers on this, and it actually seems like surface area seems to play a big part. So if you boil an entire vegetable, say like a potato, you boil it whole or you cut it into large cubes, that results in minimal magnesium loss. So that'd be the way to go if you're going to boil something. Boil it in its most intact form. However, if the potato was like shredded or thinly sliced, therefore increasing the surface area, increasing the amount of area exposed to the boiling water, then a lot of the magnesium was lost in the boiling process. So if you're going to boil something, try and keep the vegetable as whole as possible.
Yeah, so if you're an athlete, most likely you should be supplementing with magnesium just because you're going to be more stressed out. You're going to be sweating out more magnesium. You're going to be using more magnesium, just creating ATP. So if you're some sort of athlete, especially if you have cramps or have had to deal with cramps in the past, you should really, really look into supplementing with magnesium.
Yeah, and actually that really affected me personally. So I've suffered from cramps for, the majority of my life. And specifically my forearms and my hamstrings. have cramped up. I remember all through college, especially the years where I was really training hard and heavy, I would be taking tests and my forearms would lock up on me. And I mean, if you can imagine like taking a test kind of hunched over a desk, your arms kind of bent, I would have to lean back and straighten out my arm and take a test like that. Does that make sense? Like, it's super awkward. People probably thought I was trying to cheat, like leaning back to see things. But every time I would put a slight bend in my arm, my forearm would cramp up. And same thing with my hamstring. My hamstring would cramp up a lot. So I've obviously started supplementing with magnesium that has helped tremendously.
You're already a pretty big guy, so I'm pretty sure that would look really awkward. You're just trying to get as far away
from the desk as possible. In a tiny little desk,
yeah. Like, you're just allergic to the desk. Like, you want nothing to do with that shit.
Exactly. Like, it smells bad. I'm, like, just trying to stay super far away from it. Yeah, and I guess if you suffer from... Well, I guess I don't guess. I know. If you suffer from heart failure or any sort of heart disease, you probably want to supplement magnesium. Because pound for pound, our ventricles in our heart have the highest amount of magnesium in the body. That just shows how important they are for that electrical activity. Like we talked about earlier, cardiac arrest is when the heart contracts, it beats, and it never relaxes again. That's why it's so important to have magnesium in the heart to make sure the heart always opens. And I think it's called, the extraction fraction? No, the ejection fraction of the heart is the amount of fluid the heart pumps out every time it beats. And that really revolves around the heart being able to relax fully and fully swell up with blood and then contract again. And that all revolves around magnesium.
Yeah, because if it can't swell up, then it's not filling up. So if it can't relax, it's not able to actually fill with blood. So your cardiac output is going to be drastically decreased.
Yes.
Off of that. It also makes sense that since magnesium is always bound to ATP, or ATP is always bound to magnesium, that you would need a lot of ATP around your heart because you don't want your heart to run out of energy.
No, because you're dead.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, that's the last thing you want to run out of energy.
Exactly. Yeah. Another case is what we talked about earlier, diabetes. So diabetics suffer from magnesium wasting in the kidneys twofold, you know, from high blood sugar and high insulin. So they should supplement with magnesium. And also people who supplement from hypertension, so high blood pressure. So magnesium relaxes the blood vessels and is also a cofactor in the activation of nitric oxide. So that's a hormone that our body produces to relax and dilate our blood vessels, reducing blood pressure. So magnesium's involved in that. So if you have hypertension, supplement with magnesium would be smart.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I forgot to mention that earlier
with blood pressure.
Because magnesium is just a relaxer. So yeah, it's going to help decrease blood pressure through that way. Let's see. High cholesterol. Magnesium's like a statin. It works on the
HMGA CoA reductase enzyme.
Yeah, you do this
one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is something that I kind of came up with, and it's actually brilliant. It's beautiful. It shows how our body's really designed to work. So humans kind of, again, trying to mess up things and trying to make it better, but in the end, they're just making it worse by prescribing statins. So statins block the enzyme HMGA CoA reductase, and that's an enzyme that produces cholesterol. But what magnesium does is in cases of high blood cholesterol, when our body has enough cholesterol to do what it needs to do, magnesium will inhibit that enzyme. It'll slow it down so our body won't produce as much cholesterol. But in a case of low cholesterol, when our body needs more cholesterol, say there's an infection or some sort of injury and our body needs to repair itself, magnesium can speed up that enzyme, allowing more cholesterol to be made. So it's just a perfect way to regulate cholesterol. We don't want cholesterol low all the time. We want it to be able to modulate to our response, to our body's needs.
Would it also play a role in CoQ10 production? I think it's the same. If it works on that enzyme, I believe that your body would still produce CoQ10.
Yeah, it would. 100%. Yeah, because CoQ10 is downstream of HMG-CoA reductase. Yeah. So if it's going to inhibit that, it's going to actually slow down the rate of CoQ10 production as well, or ramp it up.
Yeah. Which is another, what is CoQ10? Is that it's not a mineral, it's not a vitamin.
It's
molecule.
It's like an antioxidant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
CoQ10 is a very potent antioxidant that we want for just overall mitochondrial health, but especially for your heart.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important.
So yeah, so magnesium is going to help balance your heart in multiple ways. That's why it's such a favorite with a lot of cardiologists.
Yep.
So are we ready to move on to recommended daily value?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So this number, I've come up with a lot of different numbers for this. It seems to be roughly around 400 milligrams for a male, like 300 for a woman.
Yeah, it does vary. If you look it up, you'll find three different numbers.
But I haven't really seen a maximum value to it. So I think it really just depends on the individual. And if you take too much of it, you're going to know about it. You're going to have explosive diarrhea. Is that a I'm trying to think of a gentle way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a situation where high magnesium content can produce a laxative effect. So I tested this myself. So something I don't know if I pride myself on it, but it's just something I want to do for my own just conscience is things I recommend to people, I always kind of test on myself. So I recommend magnesium to people these days. So I really wanted to test the upper limits of magnesium supplementation. You know, what caused the laxative effect in me? And again, this is very individualized. You know, our kidneys are all in different states of health. Our bodies are all in different states of magnesium deficiency, and that kind of dictates how much magnesium your intestines will reabsorb. But I started supplementing with magnesium, went to 300 milligrams a day, 600 milligrams a day, 900 milligrams a day, and I was supposed to be around, I think, 1200 milligrams a day. That's where I felt comfortable, no laxative effects, felt fine. So one day, and I think I told you about this, post-workout, I have this magnesium lotion that I've been rubbing on the muscles that I trained, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't know, this is dumb. Though this was by accident. I actually really didn't take into account the amount of magnesium in the lotion, right? So I was supposed to go, I was going to transition from 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams this week. So not that big of a jump. So I wasn't expecting any sort of laxative effect, right? So that day I had 1500 milligrams supplemented just orally.
Okay.
I didn't take into account post-workout. It was a leg day. So I trained calves, glutes, quads, hamstrings all on the same day. It's a pretty long, pretty hard workout.
So much larger surface area. I'm guessing much more lotion?
Much more lotion. Exactly, right? So to be completely honest, I'm not quite sure how much lotion I use, but it was a lot. Right?
I don't know how you'd measure it. What, are you going to weigh the container before and after?
Yeah, they say like one pump is about like one teaspoon of magnesium. And I only know this because I looked it up afterwards. Because I was like, something changed, right? So I did my magnesium throughout the day. I took that lotion post-workout. Yeah, I noticed that evening I had like loose stool. Not like explosive, not like I was running to the bathroom. And then the next morning, the same thing. Really loose stool, really watery. And I was like, okay, something's going on there. And I also noticed my urine changed colors. Almost like if you ever have taken a lot of vitamin C or you eat asparagus, you notice your urine changes color. So I obviously knew my kidneys were dumping something. And that this was at the time where I was eating the same things at the same time every day. So the only variable that was changing was my magnesium content. I'm like the one guy who can test this out and really know what was going on, you know? And I was like, man, that really happened just from a 300 milligram increase? I was like, that's crazy.
Well, at least you know your threshold and you're home to find out.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, no, the thing is it wasn't 300 milligrams. I went from 1,200 to 1,500 orally. I didn't take into account the maybe 600 to 1,200 I got from the lotion.
Oh, okay.
So that's what put me over the top.
So you doubled it.
I doubled it and didn't really think about it. And so I don't know exactly what I was out that day. I was probably anywhere from 2,100 to 2,400 milligrams of magnesium that day. And that caused a laxative effect. And again, it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like I was uncomfortable running to the bathroom. But I don't want to do it again. I'll say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So right now I'm around 1,200 milligrams a day. That's where I want to stay. And I'm just going to run that dose to hopefully replenish my magnesium stores. And I would say around 1,500, but it's honestly kind of expensive. Like, when you're supplementing with that much, it can kind of add up. So 1,200 is kind of a sweet zone for me right now.
Yeah, a cheaper way to supplement with it is, like you said, you can put the lotion on and you can absorb it through your skin. So Epsom salt baths are a really cheap way to do it. Just go buy some bath salts. Bath bombs, depends. But yeah, just read the ingredients. Make sure the first ingredient is magnesium. Should be magnesium sulfate. Magnesium chloride is another option you could be using too. It's a cheap way. Take a nice little bath. Now you're getting some benefits, some heat exposure. Baths just alone are nice and relaxing.
Relaxing, yeah.
Yeah, so like you can add a lot more things to it. Listen to a good podcast like ours while you're taking the bath.
Exactly, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can be doing. That's how I'm going to start doing it. One thing I have really done this year is done a lot more self-care. And I've been taking a lot more baths, especially after like really tough training days. So yeah, I'm going to make sure, I'm definitely be a lot more conscious of my magnesium uptake too.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry too much about taking too much magnesium. I wouldn't recommend starting out at 2,500 milligrams. I would recommend maybe starting out around 300 and just working your way up. But our body is obviously balanced. Our body is smart. So it has a negative feedback loop with magnesium. So actually high magnesium inhibits magnesium reabsorption in both the proximal tubule and the loop of Henle in the kidneys. So this inhibition leads to an increase in magnesium excretion. So this prevents the development of dangerous levels of serum magnesium in the presence of above normal intake, which just means if you supplement like me with a shit ton of magnesium, all your body's going to do is absorb less and excrete more. That's all it's going to do.
Yeah, and magnesium is extremely hydrophilic. So when you are starting to dump that extra magnesium,
you'll know.
Water is going to flow with it and you'll know.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Since it is so relaxing, a lot of people do supplement with magnesium towards the end of the day. And then also if they do overdo it, it's going to hit them first thing in the morning or the middle of the night, which is ideal. I would not recommend it, especially in the beginning, to be supplementing it first thing in the morning. And then it hits you middle of work and you're a construction worker and you're 45 stories high.
Yes, that's a great point. That is a great point. Yeah, we always recommend people start their magnesium supplementation at night. Again, it's going to help you sleep better. And if you do happen to overdose, if you do happen to be a little more sensitive to magnesium, the bathroom's right there.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. I mean, if you do have a very stressful day, you can take magnesium in the morning, but just know you're going to be a little bit more relaxed that day. So I don't know if you're like an attorney or something that needs to have that added stress and you thrive off of that added stress, maybe magnesium in the morning, it won't be the best thing for you, but
yeah. Yeah, my current regimen is I take magnesium pre-workout, I take magnesium post-workout, and I take magnesium with each meal, and I take magnesium before bed. So that's my current regimen. I spread it out. So
a lot throughout the
day. It's a fucking lot. Exactly. It is. But I genuinely feel I had a magnesium deficiency and didn't even know it. Like, I had been suffering from cramps. Like, I'm talking painful-ass cramps. Like, there's been multiple times. I might have told a story on here where I was at, like, my in-law's house. I think it was some holiday. I did a leg day that morning. That night, we're at a party. I stand up. Both my hamstrings cramp up. I fall on the ground in the middle of this party. Like, I'm talking bad cramps. So that's such a clear sign of magnesium deficiency. And honestly, there's 100 signs of magnesium deficiency since magnesium is so like intrinsically tied to all these different reactions in our body. Just Google magnesium deficiency. I thought about putting it in my show notes, but honestly, it's already like 10 pages long. It would have added 10 more pages, so it's just not worth it. But muscle cramps is such a huge one. If you suffer from them, you probably are magnesium deficient.
Yeah, another one we just talked about too is CoQ10 deficient. But it seems like these two are very, very closely tied together.
They are, yeah, 100%.
So just some magnesium-rich foods to go over with you guys real quick, where you guys can be getting it. So like green leafy vegetables, spinach is at the top of the list, kale is another good one. The best way to be eating these would be through some sort of cooking process. When I read it online, it says boil it. So the only thing I could think of boiled spinach or boiled kale would be if you make it in a soup. It's wintertime. It's a great time to be adding it to soups.
Yeah.
I personally chop up spinach and add it to omelets. Not at the current moment, but so that's something I've done in the past and will do again in the future. So that's an easy way to get some spinach into your diet. Some fruits like avocados, raspberries, some berries are good sources. Raw nuts and seeds. I mean, again, these aren't things you really want to be overdoing it with. Seafood seems to be a pretty good source for it as well. Some salmon, sardines, mackerel. Raw cacao or dark chocolate. Not milk chocolate or white chocolate, but dark. The darker, the better.
Yeah, that sounds real bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't believe the narrative that Like, you'll hear there's no vitamin C in meat. That's not true. There is. You'll also hear that meat is actually super low in magnesium. That's not true. So per about 100 grams of meat, you're going to be getting about 20 milligrams of magnesium, which is actually really good. And if you're going to be eating ham or liver, that's actually up to 25 milligrams per 100 grams. So if you think in a pound, I think it's about 450 grams. So you're going to be getting about 100 milligrams per pound of meat, which is plenty. That's enough to supplement your daily deficiency of about 100 grams after digestion is involved. Per egg, you're going to get about 13 milligrams per egg, which is actually still pretty good. So shellfish has about 44 milligrams per 100 grams, which is really good. And you talked about earlier, like seafood, squid and calamari are very high. So they have about 100 milligrams per 100 grams. So that's huge. So things that come from the sea, the sea water is 3 to 1 magnesium to calcium. So there's 3 times as much magnesium as calcium in the ocean. So sea creatures, fish, like I said, squid and calamari are going to be high in magnesium.
You know, it's not on the list that I'm reading, but I've heard this as well, is like algaes and like kelp. So kelp powder is pretty popular. Spirulina, chlorella, those are other good sources as well.
Yeah, I wanted to, that's true.
I don't know why they're not on this list, but I...
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that as well. And the reason why magnesium's in these green leafy vegetables, because we have iron in our hemoglobin, so in our red blood cells that bind to oxygen. So in plants, in their green leafy vegetables, what makes them green is actually their magnesium content. So magnesium acts like iron in us. So it binds to oxygen in the chlorophyll of those plants. Did you know that?
Did not.
I know all the shit about magnesium.
Wait, magnesium makes them green, not the chlorophyll?
Well, it's the magnesium in chlorophyll that binds to oxygen. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that everything on magnesium?
God, I'm so done talking about magnesium. Man, I can't wait to next week to talk about something else.
What, were you talking about dark chocolate and more magnesium?
I don't know. We'll have to talk it out, but hopefully I don't have to write magnesium or say magnesium for at least a few weeks. So, you want to go into the tip of the week?
Yeah, I guess that's another great transition into the tip of the week. So this one actually finally fits alongside with our
current topic.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually done one yet.
Yeah, they've been kind of different.
So this one is just an Epsom salt bath post exercise. So one thing that I've came across, and I'm pretty sure you came across this with your research as well, is that a lot of studies aren't really showing that magnesium can be absorbed through your skin. But Tyson just gave us a great anecdotal.
Some of it was
that it is true, and I've heard it so many other times that it can be absorbed through your skin. So an Epsom salt bath, you're basically just taking a bath in a big tub of hot water. You put Epsom salts in it. Magnesium is going to be absorbed through your skin. Also, you'll get some sulfate that could be absorbed through your skin as well. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's definitely going to help out a lot. And if you're somebody like Tyson that suffers from cramps or just sore muscles overall, this will greatly, greatly reduce those. And it's also just another great way just to relax after a tough workout. Switch over your body from that sympathetic state into a recovery state, that parasympathetic state. There's so many other just great benefits of taking just a hot water bath. But when you add that magnesium into it, now you're just getting a great recovery tool that not enough people are using. And it's super cheap. Hot water, relatively cheap, especially if you live here in America. Epsom salts, really cheap. Nobody's really using them.
By the pound, right?
Yeah, you can just go buy a big jug and it's like $5 to $10. It's not like you have to go buy a $7 bath bomb every single time. Like, no, you take the bath salts, they're better for you. Add that to your water. It's really simple. Sit in that for 15 minutes. The longer the better, but at least 15 minutes. Especially do it at night right before bed. Got a great workout. Now you have a great recovery tool. Now you're in a great situation to go take a good sleep. Another great recovery. So it's just helping out the entire recovery process. Mix in a great post-workout meal somewhere around in there and you're golden.
Good to go. Yeah, no, such a great tip. Definitely. Well, all right. That's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. You can find us online, social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that.
Yeah, please rate and review us. That's how new listeners can find us. Get us up higher on that Apple Podcast list. And yeah, please reach out to us. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.